I believe I am psychic.
The Heat tonight and a guy on the mound that does not have a big fastball. I think that 13 home runs away is probably going to go by the boards this evening.
My first prediction, I am either going to fly or ruin that family's picnic.
Hey, you've ruined our picnic!
Psych it!
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
A rough stretch for our White Sox. Coming out of the fog a little bit last night with a long ball, and we like it as Steve Stone joins us. Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are you?
I am just delightful. A win, and this is important. It was 67 degrees at game time, so we actually broadcast with no mufflers on, no jackets on, no earmuffs on. It was just delightful.
Matt Davidson, couple of home runs. Listen, for years and years and years, and then you know what else, Steve? Years. I've always heard if these power guys, if they just cut their swing down just a touch, is that an issue for him?
I think that home run hitters will always try to hit home runs, and Matt Davidson is very strong. The only time I want to see him cut down his stroke is when he has to make some contact. You know, if you look at the numbers over the years of Albert Pujols, you'll see a prolific home run hitter who, when he got to two strikes, would cut down his swing. And look at his strikeout totals as opposed to some of the other premier home run hitters, and you'll realize that Albert had a pretty good idea. I saw Albert in his first series ever. I was doing a show at that point with David Kaplan, of all people, and I watched him face...
Whatever happened to him, by the way? Did Kaplan ever make anything of himself?
I got to tell you something. He is, he's omniscient and he's omnipotent. And so, through everything and everywhere...
He's on something.
Yeah, but Pujols spread out. His balance was great. He faced Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, and a guy named Elmer Descends in a three-game series, and I told David in the show at that point, there's some good news and bad news out of Arizona. The good news is there's a great hitter on the horizon. You might not have heard of him, but you will. And the bad news is he's wearing two Cardinals on his chest. Albert understood how to cut down his swing. Matt Davidson is just learning to be not an Albert Pujols type hitter, because that's a once-in-a-generation hitter, but he's learning that if he cuts down his stroke a little, he's so strong that his line drives don't clang off the wall. They go over the fence. And so he's going to be able to do that still, like all non-contact hitters, like all power hitters, he's going to strike out a lot. So let's take the runs batted in. Let's take the home runs. He's still in the development stage, although he's a little bit older. He's getting extended play now. I think you'll see some good things from him. But I'm more excited about Yoan Moncada, because Moncada is starting to show what he did show when he was acclaimed the number one prospect in all of baseball. And that is a guy, right now, his exit velocity is fifth in all of baseball. And when you look at the top four, they're all prolific home run hitters, and Yoan is not at this point. He can hit home runs. You wouldn't consider him a home run hitter, but especially damaging from the left side of the plate. The exit velocity also helps the ball get through the infield. That can't be taught. You either have that or you don't. He does have it, and when he gets the right-handed reps, he's going to get it tonight against Danny Duffy. You're going to see a different hitter from the right side, but it's very tough to groove your stroke from both sides of the plate. That's why the most prolific home run hitters have always hit one way. You got Mickey Mantle stands out at the top. You've got Eddie Murray with 504 home runs, probably the second most prolific, powerful switch hitter.
Right.
But it's really difficult to groove the stroke from both sides of the plate.
Five home runs the last nine games for Moncada. He's led off the last two in the White Sox, first with home runs, first pitch off Felix Hernandez 2 days ago. Have you seen a difference, Steve, in him over this last stretch? Do you sense that he's just kind of getting more comfortable up there?
Well, again, Dave, when you take a look at a guy who was acclaimed as the number one prospect in baseball for two straight years, you realize there's an astonishing amount of talent there. Mm-hmm. So pitchers were taking advantage of off-speed pitches. They were throwing him slow curveballs, straight changes. He was swinging out in front of him. He's still going to strike out a lot. But his on-base percentage in the 340s, knocking at the door of 350. So he does have a pretty good eye. However, let's not forget the fact that he's 22 years old.
Wow.
And last year, Mookie Betts is acclaimed as the best leadoff hitter in baseball, perhaps. I'm not sure about that. There's other really good ones. But Betts is certainly one of them. Last year, he hit 24 home runs, and he batted .264. And Mookie Betts is a terrific player, don't get me wrong. I would love to have him. I think everybody would. But that was in his third year in the major leagues. Yoan has been here, 2 months, 2.5 months?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the numbers. He's going to dwarf. He's going to make those numbers look pedestrian in his third year. And Betts is acclaimed as one of the best around. I think Moncada is going to be better. And so, you know, they play a different position, obviously, but Moncada is starting to make the defensive plays, which usually happens, by the way, when a youngster starts hitting the baseball. He starts concentrating more. But like all 22-year-olds, sometimes his mind wanders. When it does, you'll see the ball clank off his glove. And so, mechanically, he's got some things to work on the defensive side. But working hand-in-hand with Tim Anderson on a daily basis, they get to know one another. They get to know the rhythms. They get to know how much ground they cover. They get to know where that throw is coming from on the pivot play. Anderson himself made just a wonderful double play yesterday. So this is a couple of the building blocks for the Sox as we move forward. These two guys should be there a long time unless somewhere along the line they decide to move Tim to center field. You might remember Sean Dunston on the north side of town. He was a guy who played shortstop. Now, his arm was considerably better than Anderson, but the range is the same. The pop-up ability is about the same. And everybody said for Dunston, you know, maybe he'd be better served in center field. He never went there. But I talked to Sean after his career, and he said, you know, he probably should have gone to center field. I said, you're kidding, aren't you? Anyway, he would have been a magnificent center fielder. And I think Tim's going to be good at wherever he plays, and I don't know what his destiny is. Depends on Lewis Robert. If Lewis Robert can play and if he can stay healthy, that's your center fielder of the future. So we'll see what happens.
Heard you and Jason talking the other day about the leadoff hitter and the way it's changed. I think it was in reference to D. Gordon with the Mariners. How do you describe or how do you define a leadoff hitter these days when you see teams going to all different types of players? We saw Kyle Schwarber, as you pointed out, lead off for the Cubs.
How'd that work out?
Well, I think we've all discovered not that great. But how do you define the role now?
It's very easy. The leadoff hitter in the American League is the guy that hits first, and he can take advantage of it because he can drive in a lot of runs if you have some speed burners at the eighth and ninth position, because then you roll over to the top. A leadoff hitter only leads off one inning. That's the first. In the National League, it becomes more dramatic because you've got the pitcher coming up behind him, except in the instances where a lot of managers, probably starting with Tony La Russa consistently, they put their pitcher in the eighth spot, putting a hitter in the ninth spot, then rolling over to the number one guy. You know, Charlie Blackmon hit leadoff last year. He drove in 102 runs. Leadoff hitters have changed. A lot of managers like one of their better hitters, one of their more prolific run producers at the number one spot, because he gets more at-bats. They like that one extra at-bat per game. In the National League, it is a different position because, again, most managers conventionally still go with the pitcher as the nine hitter, then you roll to the top. I prefer a leadoff hitter who can get on base, but you don't find the 400 on base percentages unless you see power hitters. Power hitters who pitchers are afraid of, they will pitch around at times. Consequently, they have inflated on base percentages. But the true leadoff hitters, the guy like D. Gordon, who is one of the true leadoff hitters, he's probably an endangered species because he likes to slap the ball, he likes to run, he gets on, he disrupts the game in stolen bases. But sabermetricians will tell you that the stolen base in this era has almost gone the way of the dodo bird. They just don't have a whole lot of them, and they don't care to have them because they feel giving away an out, the way pitchers can dominate at times, is too costly. So every manager has a different philosophy. The best that I've found are the guys that meld the traditional baseball outlook with the sabermetrician. I think Mike Socha said it best when he was talking about Jerry DePoto as his GM. And he said, look, there's no doubt you have more stats than I know what to do with, but give me statistics that are relevant for the game tonight. I don't want to know about the game tomorrow night, or I don't want to know about the last game of the series. Give me some things that'll help me tonight. Don't laden me down with statistics because I can't implement them. I have to still go with my gut on occasion. Because, you know, you put up a right-handed reliever who's dominant, everybody brings in a left-handed pinch hitter. Well, you did that against Mariano Rivera, and you just went through three bats because he would break them all.
Yep.
And he was much better suited, and managers started to put right-handed pinch hitters against Rivera. But that's just one instance where the numbers, the traditional baseball of left-hander against right-hander, that doesn't work. Then you go to the numbers, and you see the numbers, right-handers have more success. Tom Glavine, a Hall of Famer, the same situation. Left-handers had more success against him than right-handers.
Mariano Rivera, the kindling wood factory. Condolences to Rick Renteria, lost his mom, lived a good long life, but that's always tough. So our best to him. And what do we hear about Danny Farquhar? We haven't talked to you since last Friday, and it was only a week ago. I hear there's a little bit of good news, right?
No, there's actually a lot of good news. He actually is not only communicative, but he's able to walk. And he's able to get around and walk a little bit. And, you know, a couple of great things that happened. And we cannot understate kudos for Herm Schneider, Brian Ball, and the EMTs who got to Danny so quickly that they were able to get oxygen to him. And we hope, number one, we worry about the baseball career later. He is making great strides. He is improving. He's 31 years old. He's a professional athlete. He's doing just a great job. He's had a few, let's call it a few, brain surgeries to eliminate pressure and do some other things. And yet he's responding very well. And at 31, you have a pretty good chance. And apparently that brain bleed was in a pretty good spot where the outlook is good. Now, we don't really know what he's going to come back with as far as any type of impairment because of, you know, the blood flow.
Sure.
And some, but not much, oxygen loss. And so I just credit everybody associated with the White Sox and then Rush for getting there as quickly as possible, doing what they had to do, not only preserving his life, but one of the great parts about it, guys, is his mother and his wife were in the stands at the time.
How about that?
So even though maybe he was not conscious at times, he still felt the presence of his family around him, the well wishes of everybody associated with the White Sox. It's been a team effort. The players are wearing jerseys with his name on it. They get cards and letters and things he probably can't even come close to assimilating at this point, but he will. People want to visit him, but he's still in ICU. He's making great progress. We really wish him the best, and I think everybody, and not only, it was a testament to Danny Farquhar, it's not only the White Sox who are currently playing, but teams like Seattle, where he played before.
Sure.
Teams that knew Danny Farquhar, Kansas City is another team, and they seem to be able to reach out to him, put the jerseys up. Pray for 43 is the mantra, and it's been just a wonderful story, and hopefully it has a storybook ending.
Exactly, my friend. Royals this weekend, then to St. Louis, and then home to the Twins and the Pirates before playing at Wrigley. So get those tickets, Sox fans. We'll see you at Guaranteed Rate Field next week for the Twins and the Pirates. And thank you, Steve Stone.
Thank you. And Andrea, you never sounded better.
Steve,
goodbye, boys. Have a
I
good
miss
show.
You. Love you, Steve.
I miss you, too.
She can't wedge a word. She can't get a
I
word
can't.
In with me. And with the three of us, no. She can't get
hey,
a word
in. Hey, I was going to tell him to save me one of the White Sox no ketchup t-shirts.
Yeah, they are pushing those. No ketchup. That's exactly right.